All right, welcome to the first edition of the season for the Haha Hoops podcast. I'm your host, Ernest Christian. Welcome to 2016/17 season of the Miami Heat, the 29th season of the Miami Heat, of course. I'm really excited about today's podcast. Of course, we're joined here by the president of Heat Twitter, hashtag Heat Twitter, my man on Twitter, at Alf954. Alf, what's up?
What's going on, man? Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely, man. I've been following for a long time now. And first off, I must say, you and I are probably best friends already, man. Because if what your info says is true on Twitter, you and I share the share both favorite football and NBA teams.
NFL, oh, so you're NBA. A Giants fan?
Oh, I named my kid Eli. Come on now.
Oh wow, that's fantastic.
My dog's named Osi. So there you go.
There you go.
Dead ass serious too, bro. Dead ass serious.
Well, you can't spell elite without Eli, which I say every Sunday. Whether he's throwing a pick or throwing a touchdown, I put that out there every Sunday.
Or overthrowing Odell Beckham last. It's been a rough couple weeks for Eli, though, to be honest with you. But
he is not the same. I don't know. I think maybe he's been hit too many times. He does not look like he wants to get hit anymore. So
what's funny?
I don't know.
The hit that he took in the Redskins game, I can't remember who hit him, but since then he's been kind of a little bit shaky, a little bit gun shy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Yes, yes. Short arming throws, you know, just getting rid of the ball. I mean, he's always been a gunslinger, but I don't even see gunslinging now. I just see like, oh my God, someone's gonna hit me. Let me just throw the ball at the ground. I see a lot.
It's weird. It's really weird.
Yeah, he used to stand in there and take the hits. I mean, he's a huge guy. Like, I don't know, man. Maybe he's just shell-shocked. I don't know,
man. But we're here talking Heat basketball, of course. Before we get started, how did you get the moniker President of Heat Twitter? Because I think it's earned. I think definitely it's earned. I think you earned that.
Well, that it's funny how that happened. That was actually off of when there's a very famous Heat Twitter member named Spoon.
Okay.
Who would tell you to learn the game, and he just disappeared. I guess things weren't going well, and he just had it with the whole Heat fan base, and he just up and disappeared. He deactivated his account. He was gone.
When was this?
Like a ghost. This was maybe summer of last year, beginning of last season.
Okay.
There was how Heat Twitter is, man. It's a bunch of savages. Yeah. You know, he just got kind of fed up, so he left. And then, so the question was posed by Ethan J. Skolnick,
yes,
of, I guess, CBS Sports Now, and who has an afternoon show in Miami on 790 The Ticket. And he posed, who was, if Spoon's gone, who is the Heat Twitter president? So he had an idea to have an election on the radio. The election went terribly. a lot of like rando Heat Twitter members called in, a couple well known, but you know, they really, you know, it was the segment was just awkward and weird. People were calling in, giving speeches. So they had asked me, you know, because I had a little bit of a hand in helping Ethan get his show, because anybody who follows the Heat loves Ethan.
Oh, of course. He's the best, dude.
So you know, I had a little bit of hand in helping him get his show through, you know, like a little grassroots Twitter campaign. Heat Twitter is a big part of, you know, that show. So they asked me to come on and do a little speech. But my speech was basically Heat Twitter is a bunch of savages, and we don't need a president because we let chaos and anarchy reign. So I went on about a 45-second minute stump speech. On air. It was funny. Sedano and Mike Wallace were sitting in on that episode.
Oh, no,
on the
really?
On that show. Yeah. And Sedano's actually another guy I get along with pretty well. So he, you know, at the end, Sedano's clapping. Sedano's like, give it to him. Give him the presidency. And then they did an online poll, and I won. So the funny thing is, I went on there to say that Heat Twitter doesn't need a president and somehow came out of it as the president of Heat Twitter.
Like that, man.
Just like that.
Stole the crown.
Stole the crown, and people ask me how I feel about it. I said, "What do you mean how I feel about it? It's not like a cool thing, you know."
Hey, but people do recognize you as such. So I mean,
yeah, but it's not like I can go to bars and go to the club and tell chicks I'm the Heat Twitter president and impress them. It's a very
So you say you haven't tried that yet? going to go to a bar and say, hey, baby, well, I'm heat to the president, though. What's up?
I'm married, so I wouldn't do it.
Oh!
But if I was,
damn,
if I was, if I was single, but even my wife isn't impressed. You know, I try to even tell my kids, hey, you know, daddy's heat Twitter president, and they say, whatever, loser, and they go back to playing video games. So, yeah, it's one of the most undistinguished monikers you could really apply to yourself. So, but it's fun, man. Heat Twitter's fun. Heat Twitter's great. Made my name, if you will, off of Heat Twitter. It's led to the HeatBeatMiami.com. I write for HeatBeatMiami.com.
Great segue, man. That's a great segue. So I was asked about that because I really, really – look, I've been a Heat fan since year two of the existence of this franchise. And I've – you know, and through the years I've seen all the fans, whatnot, and now, of course, with social media and media with my podcast. So I got to be honest with you. You guys do phenomenal work. I love your podcast. I absolutely love it. Like I and it's funny. I feel bad because I only found this podcast, I think maybe March of this year, like during last season, and I enjoyed it so much. I started listening to some of all the older back episodes from like, you know, last year and whatnot. You guys are phenomenal, man.
Well, thanks. I mean, it's really taken off.
Yeah.
One thing that's cool, like, you know, sites like yours, Hot Hoops. You know, there's a couple different sites out there. I feel like that, you know, I think like Lock on Heat, they have a podcast.
Yes.
We went on. We actually did a joint podcast with them
last week. Yeah, I saw that.
Man, the Heat fan community, it's funny, man. I think there's a lot of us doing some really good work, and it's all produced by fans. You know, we have Nikias Duncan. I don't know if you know him. He's excellent. He writes for us a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He writes for some other sites. Today's Fast Break.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's funny. I feel like we became better fans because of the way that we were portrayed in the media as fans. Right. So we tried really hard to become better educated about the game. And in doing so, I think it's created a lot of good. Small bloggers, media members, podcasters. It's created a really good community around the Heat, and I think a lot of us are doing really good things.
Yeah, I'm really impressed. I think definitely, certainly the Big Three era, with LeBron, Bosh, and Wade, of course, you know, really, it felt like because it was us against the world, pretty much.
Yes.
It felt like that we all, because I mean, honestly, like, you know, the Heat obviously had a fan base for years, but it always felt like it was kind of a fair weather. And I can say this because I've been a fan so long. It always felt fair weather until probably until Wade got here anyway. Until Dwayne got here. Once Dwayne got here in 03, I think that flipped. And I think you started having another generation of kids who actually became fans for over a decade, who made it part of the culture. And especially now with social media now, I mean, it's really – because I look at the Lakers, for example. The Lakers have a phenomenal huge fan base. And they're all – I mean, they're all over the damn place. I can't get rid of them if I wanted to.
Exactly, you know? Yeah.
And I feel like Miami's starting to have that same effect now to maybe a little bit of a smaller scale because it is a younger franchise. People forget it's under 30 years old still.
Yep.
But the Heat fan base in the last, I would say, 15 years have really grown in leaps and bounds, man.
Well, I've written about this, and I think it's fascinating. I think you have a confluence of circumstances, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have the Dolphins being terrible,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
You have around the same time the Heat rising to prominence with Wade and Shaq, and then the Big Three era. So, you know, kids 18 to 25, you know, I mean, you're 18 to 25 years old right now. You've never seen the Dolphins do anything, right? And you've seen the Heat have nothing but success.
Yes.
I'm not saying nothing but success, but you've seen the Heat be the most successful franchise in your market. Now, also, now as you were saying, like, it's not just that the Heat fans were fair weather. I just feel like they were passionate, but they really were – they weren't considered good basketball fans, right?
Right.
Or intelligent, smart basketball fans because really we – you know – it wasn't talked about on sports radio. There wasn't a lot. I mean, you'd get the articles about the Heat, but nobody was breaking down pick and rolls now. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So I think what happened, and this is funny, and I wrote about it, is LeBron coming down here not only made a more rabid fan base, it made a smarter fan base because we spent 4 years defending him. at every step of the way. And how did we have to defend them? What did we always do when someone would bring up clutch or clutch gene or big games and taking the last shot? We would go back and we would do research, right?
We delved
into the numbers. People saying Kobe's better than LeBron. So we had to go back and we looked at the numbers and we started looking at more and more numbers. Mm-hmm. And guys like Tom Haberstroh came down here and all of a sudden they're telling us about true shooting percentage.
Yeah.
And we're talking about PER and efficiency. We weren't talking about that stuff in 2006.
Hell no.
You know, all we did was just cool, man. Like Shaq is here, it was a party.
Yeah.
But we weren't hated. So we didn't have to defend what we, you know, we, you know, so, There were haters saying, you know, the refs gave us the title, but we were like, whatever, screw you, we won, ha ha. Mm-hmm. Now it became, especially after that first Dallas series in 2011, we had to defend our Heat team and LeBron James so fervently. Like, we studied this stuff, man. I used to have stats memorized for barbershop arguments. Like, we became smarter, better basketball fans. And then now that, you know, the gloss is gone, you know, what's left, man? What's left is a lot of diehard basketball fans who spent some of their formative years getting to know this team and getting to know the numbers.
What was your reaction to LeBron leaving and deciding to go back home 2 years ago? What was your initial reaction at the time?
I wasn't mad at him. I was just more mad at just a narrative. And that's what we've been battling down here for so long, right?
Mm-hmm.
Narratives. Narratives that were bad fans. Narratives that, you know, bad franchise. Narratives that Pat's a snake. You know, all these different – we battle narratives. And then this narrative comes along that, you know, it's to go home. You know, the real fans, the hardworking fans of Cleveland. You know, blue-collar, you know – Northeast Ohio, this blah blah blah, crap. Like, it was just such nonsense. Because we all, like, being down here, being around it, we kind of knew what it was about. We kind of knew that it was a power grab, it was a power shift. It was, you know, this was always going to be Riley's team. We had gotten those inclinations. We listened to the guys down here, the local reporters,
right?
And we had an idea of what this was already about. But then, you know, it's everybody else took it as face value as a Lee Jenkins article about a kid from Northeast Ohio. And that's what pissed me off. So, you know, and that's why I was one of the first guys who started the whole Stay Petty campaign.
That was you?
Oh, I was one of the originators of Stay Petty. Oh, yeah. Team Petty, Stay Petty. Oh, I was heavy
Team Petty
into
applied,
Team Petty.
Bro. Team Petty applied for that first year. Especially, and, you know, definitely the first year post-LeBron. I mean, I'll admit I was part of that too.
Oh yeah, I was heavy into Team Petty, you know, and it was more about the narratives, more about the media. That's where I get pissed off. I just get pissed off at the way we're portrayed sometimes. And you know what? It was like the whole country was laughing at us again, and it was like, you know what? F it. You know, I'm just gonna be petty. I'm gonna be nasty. That, you know, this, you know, this decision has wrought. You know,
I remember treating the first game LeBron played down here in Christmas time, 2014. Like a Super Bowl, seriously. I was like,
oh, listen, Danny Granger.
I was gonna say that, Danny Granger.
I could say 1,000 terrible things about him, but he gave me one of my favorite Heat memories of all time.
Yeah,
you know, so that Christmas Day win was amazing. So,
yes.
You know, as much as I despise Danny Granger and his overly tight uniform, I can say, yeah, no, his uniform was uncomfortably tight,
yes, it
man.
Is. Yes, it
yeah,
is.
it's.
Okay, let's do a timeline here of things that happened to Heat. The Heat have been very, very active, to say the least, this summer, both on and off the court. First off, first order of business, they re-signed Hassan Whiteside, 4 years, $98 million, right out the gate. You're okay with that, right?
Yes. I thought it's what you had to do. You have to keep your guys. You got to keep your assets.
Yeah, yeah. Now, obviously, they were in the Kevin Durant sweepstakes, although I mean, anybody with common sense knew the Heat chance again, Kevin Durant was slim to none, but they don't get Durant. People were critical though about the fact that the Heat were trying to get him instead rather than pay attention to Dwayne Wade. What was your thoughts on that at the time when the Heat were trying to get Durant first before dealing with Wade after?
I think when a guy like Durant is available, you have to try, right?
Right. I agree.
And, you know, and if you're Pat Riley, and you know, even though you. The fact that you're Pat Riley and you get that meeting, even though everyone looks at your chances, I mean, and people are still giving the Heat a chance. And really, basketball-wise, it didn't make much sense because, you know, the uncertainty with Chris Bosh, you know, then it also already felt like there was going to be an issue with Dwayne. So for Pat Riley to get that meeting says something about Pat Riley, and it also says that you have to go after it. You have to take that chance when it presents itself, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we can say what we want to say about, you know, should they have talked to Dwayne first and this and that? Did they owe him this, owe him that? At the end of the day, you know, it's a business, right? Mm-hmm. And Kevin Durant and Hassan Whiteside, as far as, you know, I'm concerned, were probably what was best for business. You know, it sucks because I'm Dwayne Wade's my favorite basketball player of all time, right? And for them to still go back and offer him 2 years, $40 million, I thought they were doing right by him.
I thought so too. Yeah.
But, you know, his feelings got hurt. And part of me thinks that he just wanted to leave anyway. You know, it was time, I think. It really was. Because, you know, what are we going to go through this every offseason? You know, it was – maybe it was just time for him to walk away. It was time – you know, I think it was just the right time. It sucks that it had to be – you know, the divorce had to be messy. But, you know, I would have loved to see Dwayne Wade finish his career in a Miami Heat uniform. But as a Heat fan – we have to kind of look at it and say, you know, we love Dwayne. Dwayne was a big part of, you know, our love of the Miami Heat. But why wasn't Dwayne trying to help us get Kevin Durant, right? Why, you know, why was Dwayne off in the Mediterranean on a boat? You know, and it sounds harsh, but did Dwayne really think that a team led by him and a bunch of guys who, on the minimum, were going to win a championship? So, at the end of the day, was Dwayne trying to help us win?
Right.
And you can make the argument that no, he wasn't trying to help us win. He was trying to get paid. And I'm not besmirching him for that in any way at all, right? Because that's his right to get paid. But as a fan, you know, what should my end game be? My end game should be me wanting to see my team win. And I think we had gotten to the point with Dwayne that the goals weren't aligned anymore.
Right. And once you're hearing too that the Heat are trying to make moves to facilitate Wade's contract or money demands, but it would take moving Justice Winslow or assets. I'm like, no. Now we're going backwards now. Even with Dwayne, we're going backwards.
And then you have the fans say, why didn't they just trade McBob?
No one won the contract. They tried.
Nobody wants that bum with the bum foot. Like, nobody.
By the way, he's hurt tonight too, just for the record.
Of course he is. It's a day that ends in Y.
Oh my God! I mean, and to think I was so gung ho on that pickup, you know, 3 years ago. Like I was sitting here saying, okay, this is our new Boris Diaw. Okay, I see. And
yeah, and he has shown some signs, man. Like when he plays, his defense is surprisingly good. He's a playmaker. He doesn't shoot, which is maddening.
Right.
But the problem, and none of us could have foreseen it, he just can't get on the court and stay on the court.
Right.
So, I mean, I was excited about him. I really was, but, yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is, man. What do you make of the all the other summer acquisitions post-Wade, you know, the Ellingtons, the Babbitts, the James Johnson of the world? Are you excited? Do you feel like these guys could contribute in a big way this year?
I feel like, you know, I did a preview where we broke down basically every player the Heat were bringing into camp. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know four or five of them, and I wasn't doing research on it. That's not really my thing. So, you know, Stankovic and Okoro White. Yeah, I wasn't. Someone was like, hey, go. You can look up their D-League stats. I was like, okay, yes, funny. That's not happening.
No way. What's the point?
Yeah, we're not. We're not doing that. We're smarter fans, but listen, I have a life. You know, there are players on this team that I'm excited about. Long term, what we got. We got Justice, we got Josh Richardson, we got TJ, we got Hassan. Hopefully Briante Weber doesn't get picked up by someone else because he's not going to last with the team. I mean, he's not going to make the 15-man roster, unfortunately, because I love that guy. Mm-hmm. So you know what we have. And I'm so excited about the young guys, right? And then there's a lot of journeymen, right? And so these journeymen, are they going to stick? I don't think many of them will stick. I think, you know, some of these guys, I hope Willie Reed sticks. I think some of these guys have a chance to either get a strong contract for themselves going forward, or, you know, becoming a part of the Heat franchise for years to come. But I don't really see a lot of that happening. What I am excited about is I feel like with what the Heat had to work with the goals for the season and beyond, I feel like they did pretty much the best they could do with what they had, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel like they put a team together around Hassan and around Goran that maybe they're not going to be top four seed in the East.
No.
Maybe they can sneak into the playoffs. And no matter what, this team is going to be exciting to watch every night. And that's what I think is important.
Well, I've been saying to a lot of people that, trying to sell the Heat this year, like, okay, look, they may not be what they were the last six years, but they're going to be competitive. I think they're going to be competitive and fun to watch.
I think it's going to be more fun than last year.
Oh, yeah. Basketball-wise, yeah, absolutely.
The playoff form was great. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we talked about it a little bit off air. I've tweeted about it. I've talked about it on the Heat Beat podcast. Mm-hmm. I feel like this team is going to skull drag the bad teams of this league.
I think, agree with that.
I think they're going to play the Brooklyn Nets, and when they play the Brooklyn Nets, they're going to blow them out of the water, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun just watching some blowouts, fast pace, up and down the court. I was watching the game the other night, first quarter, I think with a minute left, either every made shot was either a layup or a dunk or a three. Mm-hmm. Man, that's fun basketball.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the key this year for this team is really, honestly, I know everybody's saying Whiteside, but I think Goran Dragic is the key to this team to being successful. This team could be a playoff team if Dragic is back to where he was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, rather, in Phoenix.
Well, if the preseason is any indication, when Goran and Hassan step off the floor, it gets a little scary. Yeah. It gets shaky, man, and that's why I've said that, yeah, they're going to beat the brakes off the bad teams, but the elite, the good to great teams, they're going to struggle because they can't afford to have these offensive lulls that they have, that they've been having in the preseason, and which undoubtedly will come, especially because, you know, you have guys like TJ and Deion Waiters as your secondary ball handlers when Goran's on the bench. And, you know, those guys are a little bit of feast or famine as far as ball control is concerned, you know, ball security. They might just start turning the ball over like crazy, and you can't afford that against Cleveland, against, you know, even Boston. There's going to be some teams that, you know, they're going to put up a valiant effort, mm-hmm. and, you know, every once in a while they might shine through, but it's going to be against the elite teams. It's not going to be pretty.
What do you think is a realistic win total for this team this year?
It's okay when we were first going into the season and I saw the acquisitions, I said, I think I said 45 if Bosch plays.
Right.
37 if he doesn't.
Okay.
I think I'd push that more to 40-41
really?
Now. Yeah. I think this team's going to be exciting middle of the road. They're going to be a 500 team, and in the East that might give you a 7 seed.
And you got to count for somebody, one or two teams in the East who might regress. Like New York could be overrated and they fall back to the pack a little bit. You know, you may have some of those teams that we think are good heading into the year, but then as the year progresses, they're not so much, you know.
I mean, outside of three or four teams, what do we know about anybody in the East this year? Right?
Right.
Because Atlanta occupied a top four seed. Was that last year? I mean,
they were a 5 seed last year, aren't they?
Yeah, well, Atlanta was, you know, one of the top four or five teams.
Yeah.
Where are they going to be, right? Who knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Boston, I think Boston will probably take the number two or number three seed. Mm-hmm. Then you have the Raptors. After that, man, what do you know?
That's true.
What do you know about Chicago?
I mean, you Chicago, I think I'm not sold on Chicago this year. I don't care what the Wade and Rondo and I just don't see how that works.
I think in like 2001, Chicago might have been an interesting team, but not in today's NBA. Not with a bunch of guys, you know, a bunch of guys, all they do is drive and kick. I mean, eventually somebody has to shoot. And I'm not sold on this Dwayne Wade preseason three-point, you know, barrage he's been throwing. You know,
Show me a larger sample of that. And in any case, too, if he's doing it now, why didn't he do it before?
No, because this is what I feel like is going to happen, right? Dwayne will start the season where he's on that three-point line and he's taking those threes, They'll lose, and then he'll start complaining that that's not really, you know, that's not his game.
Right.
He needs to get back to his game, and he's going to abandon it again.
Right.
Like, I've seen it before.
We've all, absolutely.
Yeah, we've all seen this movie. Yeah. You know, it starts to become, you know, I'm Dwayne Wade. Why am I standing in the corner?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, how long are we going to watch Dwayne Wade stand in the corner? It ain't got, you know.
Especially playing with Rondo, who likes to crush the shot clock down to the milliseconds.
Yep.
So, I mean, last thing we'll let you go, man. I mean, we have to touch on this before we let you go. I call it the Boscapades. Obviously, the Chris Bosh saga. Right now, he is no longer considered. Well, I won't say considered. He's no, you know, the Heat are not working in concert to get him back. He failed his recent physical with the Heat a couple weeks ago. I guess I want to ask you is this, though. We already know the tea leaves and what we've seen in the documentary he's been putting out on the Bleacher Report, whatnot. What's been your assessment of this entire Bosh thing in the last month or so?
I think it's sad. I think there's a lot of misguided anger, misappropriated anger, by fans, by Bosh, by the Heat. I mean, by everybody. You know, because when all this was happening, you know, there was all this conjecture, all these, you know, all these rumors, this and, oh, what the Heat are trying to do this, Bosh is trying to do this. And I said on pods repeatedly, I wrote it on heatbeat.com. None of all this stuff we're talking about, none of it matters.
Right.
None of it. It's all obsolete. None of it matters. What matters is what happens when he sits there in a room with team and league doctors, what the doctors say. It all comes down to the doctors. It didn't matter whatsoever if Pat wanted to save money on the cap.
Right.
It didn't matter whatsoever if Bosh felt that he could play. None of it mattered. All that mattered is what happens when he sits in front of a doctor. And what happened? He got in front of a doctor. The doctor looked at him. He's on blood thinners, and he's having a third occurrence of clotting. That's it, right?
It's called a pattern.
It's a pattern, and it had nothing to do with Pat Riley at the end of the day, right? It had nothing to do with Rich Paul, Maverick Carter, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, Adrian Bosh, his kids, you know, the idiot at my barbershop who's always arguing with me about this. It had nothing to do with any of them. It had to do with what a doctor said. It's medical. It does. And then, okay, Heat doctors. Oh, Riley's paying off the Heat doctors to tell Chris Bosh he can't play. Sure. Follow that stupid meme if you want to. But then he goes to league doctors in New York, and they tell you the same thing. So who cares about all this other stuff? Who cares about the documentaries with Maverick Carter? He can't play.
Plain and simple. That's what I understand, too. Chris Bosh is a smart guy. Love the guy. Very smart guy. I mean, he's got to be hearing something out there that there's still a chance. I mean, he can't be this ignorant to think that, okay, all these tests and everybody's telling you can't play, but one doctor out here is saying you probably could play and whatnot. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. And I think what's happening is there's people, and this is things, you know, stuff that I've been told, some inferences that people, you know, certain reporters have made, is that there's people around Chris who are pushing him towards this, right? Which boggles my mind, because I just never felt that Chris was that guy where, you know, you could influence him in a way that would, where he would risk his life. I mean, because that's what he's doing. He's risking his life. Especially when doctors are telling him he can't play. It's not like, you know, doctors saying, oh, you know, you can get out. No, they're telling him you can't play. And I just feel like there's people out there, there's people in his circle that are pushing him towards this. What are their motivations? Who knows?
Play financial.
Financial, but I didn't even get the financial part, because he's getting paid his $76 million no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's not like a guy who – And that's the thing that's crazy. We never associated Chris Bosh with just basketball, have we? I feel always thought he was like this Renaissance man who had a thousand different interests. We almost felt like, you know, how many times was there criticism that he wasn't competitive enough, or that, you know, maybe basketball wasn't on the top of his mind? And now we get to this point where, you know what, Chris, you got $76 million coming to you. You won two titles. You've traveled the world. You know, they're telling you to hang it up. you would think he would just bow out. You would think he'd be the kind of guy to say, I have too much to live for.
Right.
And bow out gracefully.
I mean, he's like the anti-MJ, anti-Kobe. Like, he's like, to me, I've always said, you know, with Chris Bosh, like, he's a guy that you look at him, he's like, you know, he doesn't need basketball. He has blogging. No. He can be on TV, you know, brewing beers now. He has so many other interests out there that I always felt like, you know, he doesn't need basketball. But this is strange. And I want to respect Chris Bosh here, too, because of the fact that, okay, if somebody is telling him that he could do this, then he's not an idiot to ignore all the negatives. I mean, I don't know. You want to respect him in a sense, but there's far too much risk here, in my opinion. I'm talking as an outsider.
Yeah. And maybe it's that he just doesn't want to look like a quitter, right? He doesn't want to look like, hey, they said I couldn't play anymore. That's cool. I'm not going to play. Maybe he wants to come off as a fighter, and maybe he knows that the end game is he'll never play again, right?
He's fighting. But
part of me, like, if that's the case, then why are you dragging people's names through the mud? You know, why are you making the Heat out to be this bad guy? And that's so. You know, Giancarlo Navas, who co-founder of Heat Beat and the host of the podcast, he always says, like, there must be something else that we just don't know.
Right.
Between him, Riley, Arison, something that we don't know that went on that has created this distrust, this kind of poisonous state that, you know, the relationship is in.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, there's no winners here. The Heat, Chris Bosh, there are no winners here, man.
No.
But you're a winner, and the Miami Heat Beat's a winner, of course. Check out the site at MiamiHeatBeat.com, right? Am I right there?
MiamiHeatBeat.com, right. Or I think you can also go HeatBeatMiami.com, I guess, for those, I was going to say dyslexic, but I don't think that's not politically correct, is it? I can't say that.
And, of course, follow you on Twitter at Alf954. That yes, is his sir. Name. That's his name on his birth certificate, Alf954. If you ever get a radio show, it'll be the Alf954 radio show. I swear
that's
to God.
that's government now. That's
absolutely,
the government,
brother.
Now.
Absolutely. I mean, hey, look, you're the president.
Yeah, the I can. I make the rules. So
right now, I wish we were running for president right now in the United States, but that's just me. You know.
Listen, that's all. We can do. We can do two more hours on that one.
Shoot, don't believe me.
Don't get me started.
Well, we'll bring on a podcast hopefully in a couple of weeks when the season starts and stuff. We'll discuss the latest in the hopefully Heat got to a good start.
Definitely, I love to, man. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely, brother.
You know, anytime you need me, give me a call.
All right, man.